Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 187 of the Blazers Edge podcast, presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia.
Yeah, you are. And I'm your weekend co-host, Brandon Goldner. You can always hit us up at BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com. And you can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. You can also find our work at Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook, wherever we are. We want to hear from you, whether you have story topic ideas, guest ideas, or just ideas on how to make the show better. We definitely want to hear from you.
Joining us this week on the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast is Oregon Live Blazers beat reporter Mike Richmond. Mike, thanks for coming on the show again, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris. Enjoy being here already. I'm already looking forward to it.
Yes, we're really stoked to have you. And up front, real quick, I just want to talk a little bit about the My Friend Chuck podcast that you have going on with, I guess, your friend Chuck, talking about the Blazers, huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty on-the-nose name. This is maybe season two, year two. It's basically my college buddy and I, who we used to watch Blazer games, and we would probably spend about a week or once a week probably talk on the phone for, you know, 35, 45 minutes about hoops. And I decided that we should do this professionally instead. So now we talk over Skype and we record it and put it on the internet for people to listen to. So it's basically just like my BS insider knowledge and a Blazer fan across the country. But it's been a ton of fun and I love doing it.
It's a great show, Blazers Edge listeners. Check that out. I believe you can find that on iTunes. So give that a subscription and a listen if you'd like. I want to talk about Mike. You know, there's quite a bit going on with the Blazers right now. It seems like there's kind of some fairly high peaks at times and some fairly low valleys. If we're talking about, you know, the Clippers game last week, the Chicago game this week. I mean, I guess here I want to start and ask you about these two games where I'm kind of referring to them as zero effort games, or I guess lack of effort games, where it just looks like the Blazers didn't really come to play. And if I look at the leadership of Damian Lillard and the guys around him and the way that they've approached the game over the last couple seasons under his leadership, this seems to me like something that's pretty uncharacteristic, you know, not showing up to play for, you know, not only not four quarters, but not at all, not entirely, you know, that those two games, and that's, you know, two out of the first 11 games. You expect that to happen a few times out of 82 games. I mean, they dropped one to the Sixers last year, but
right.
You know, this season so early on, it's happened already twice. So is there something, you know, demonstrably different with this team going on that we can kind of point to and say that may be kind of an underlying cause here, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, I don't know if there's something you could put your finger on and say, you know, this is the issue. I think the like easy thing to say is that everyone got paid this summer, but that seems bizarre. Dame got paid last summer, didn't he? He signed a huge contract last summer, made $150 million. He made $200 million from Adidas the summer before that. So I'm not sure that cash has really ruined your boy Damian. And I can't imagine that the rest of them are intentionally bricking shots because they're got a paycheck. But I do think the effort thing is bizarre. Terry losing his mind in the halftime in the Nuggets game, and the Blazers all of a sudden clicked into gear and outscored him 36-15 in the third and kind of won that game going away. But I think that was a zero effort game. I think that was just like sometimes you meet the machine. They got caught in the meat grinder in that one. And but the Nuggets game where they just didn't play hard for the first half, and the Bulls game where they sort of never had the juice. I think those are troubling. I don't know what to point to, but those are definitely, that is not something I thought was going to happen with this group at all.
So one thing that I've been talking about with some of my friends and actually some of the colleagues here at Blazers Edge is this sentiment that last year the team didn't really have high expectations, right? And they took this approach of, well, it's us against the world. If you doubt us, we're going to hit harder. This kind of hashtag they mentality. And this year, you don't have that, right? They made it to the second round of the playoffs. I mean, injuries to the Clippers notwithstanding, they did make it to the second round. And so do you think that could be playing any part of it, that this team maybe doesn't have an identity, or at least that same kind of us against the world identity they could hang their hat hang their hat on this year that perhaps they could last year. Do you think that could possibly be playing into it at all?
A little bit. I think every team in the NBA is searching for the nobody believed in us narrative. It's I mean, not even in the NBA, like literally every sports team is trying to find this sort of nobody believed in us narrative, even when they're totally believed in. But I do think there's something to the fact that expectations have shifted and that the Blazers have put those expectations on themselves more so than I think fans and pundits have. Like, I'm not sure that the national media views the Blazers as a Western Conference Finals team, but then the Blazers spent all of training camp talking about making the Western Conference Finals. So certainly their internal perception of themselves has changed, and maybe that has somehow shifted the way they approach games. But again, I think this is just a weird blip more than anything else. Like, I think their issues are more about skills than about want to. I think right now they're missing their best defender and they don't have a lot of answers outside of that.
So what about Evan Turner early on? You know, we're kind of trying to figure this out here because all summer we talked about whether or not he was even, you know, a good player or an above average player. And now 11 or so games into the season, as we're talking about it, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could look at it. And, you know, I've heard a lot from Celtics fans, or at least a couple times, where they say, you know what, just give it time. You're going to love him. He's going to become this consummate role player and just kind of be.
Everyone in Boston loves Evan Turner. It's the most bizarre thing about him is he is beloved in Boston. Absolutely beloved.
I remember before that, it was like, I don't even remember anything about him in Indiana. So like, to me, he was just kind of this.
Well, he was only in Indiana for whatever, trade deadline end of the season. But he wasn't very good in Philly either. I mean, that's kind of the thing about Evan is before he got to Boston, he was pretty much considered a bust. And he's pretty open about that. He had a line at practice the other day where he said, you know, I was well on my way to be a phenom until the NBA came and got in the way. So this isn't his first time sort of coming up against doubt it isn't his first time playing bad. This isn't new to him. There's two ways to look at the Evan Turner problem. One is that they sunk $70 million into something, an idea, and they ended up with a player that doesn't fit the idea. They wanted a ball handler, a third distributor, and this defender. What they got is a guy who likes to pound the rock and take a lot of mid-range jumpers. So that's not necessarily what they were telling us he was, or at least what the brass was convinced that they had signed. Or you look at it like you looked at Gerald Henderson last year. Gerald Henderson sucked for the first 35 games. Like, no way around it. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he's just finding his way. Like, he sucked. He was terrible. Look at his numbers for the first 40 games. He was unplayably bad. Lost minutes to Mo Harkless, who was eventually benched in January because he couldn't play either. So the Blazers they had this problem last year with two wings. The problem was those two wings didn't cost $70 million. So you either say that there's this patient approach and that once you figure out Terry's system and learn how to play with the guards, Evan Turner will get it, and it's early to do this, but you say that they blew it and now you think about in an NBA where a lot of teams need wings, maybe they can send him somewhere else.
And I just want to say, as far as Celtics fan, I want to stand up for a friend of the show, Snotty Drippin, RIP Snotty Drippin, James Holis. He just recently changed his Twitter handle. He never liked Evan Turner kind of at all. And I just wanted to ask, I don't want to dump on Evan Turner the whole show, but just earlier in the season, maybe not so much now because the Blazers have presented other problems that we can certainly be focusing on. But it seemed to me, to my eye, that even it wasn't even just that Evan Turner himself was playing poorly. It seemed like the team looked maybe a little bit hesitant or confused or not super comfortable around Evan Turner when Evan Turner was on the floor. Did you see any of that at all? And is that probably going to work itself out as time goes on? Maybe that part of it?
Yeah, maybe it does, right? I think that's the big question. Yeah, I did see them. I feel like there's some part of the whole team that says, let's get this guy going. Let's get him going. Here we go. We're going to get Evan Turner going. Let's get him in the flow. because last year the bench was so good because they just let CJ dribble for 40 seconds. They just said, okay, dude, you can dribble as long as you want, and we will sort of move off the ball, and Ed Davis will set some screens, and Myers Leonard will space, and we'll figure it out from there. But now there's this, like, CJ is a rock pounder, and man, he's good at it. But that's his MO. So now they have this bench unit where CJ wants to sort of go and get his and dance, and this is his time to take over and be the number one guy. But then it's like, how do you get Turner involved? He can't space. He's a terrible catch and shoot shooter. He needs sort of rhythm to get into his shot. So I feel like there was this early on, and maybe even recently in the last two games too, because he's got a bunch of shots up. Don't get it twisted. He's taken like 30 shots in the last two games. To get him in the flow and get him involved. And it just, you know, I think the most damning thing about Evan, and I guess we're not supposed to be crapping on him the whole time, but the most damning thing about Evan Turner is that he can't play at the end of the game yet. They haven't used him at crunch time a single minute. It's been Mo, it's been Myers Leonard, or it's been Alan Crabb as that fifth guy, and it's never looks like it's going to be Evan Turner. And that's, you don't invest $70 million, or you maybe shouldn't, if someone who can't play at the end of the game.
So, Mike, if we're looking at, you know, all the guys on the Blazers besides CJ McCollum, who signed, you know, big to reasonably big contracts this summer, Alan Crabb, Evan Turner, Myers Leonard, you know, Mo Harkless, you have that guy at the end there, Mo Harkless, who didn't sign until everybody else got all of their money. And, you know, it seems to me like of those guys, he seems to be the most consistent contributor on both ends of the floor for the Blazers this year of those guys. Is that accurate to say, you think?
Yeah, I think the Blazers found their formula at the end of last year, and that what worked at the end of last year still works now. It's just sort of the other parts that are troubling at this point.
So I guess Mo Harkless there, you know, in general, it seems like he's shooting the three ball a lot better. Has he added anything else to his game that you can see? I know that he was, you know, he corrected, you know, that issue with his shot where he was watching the ball in instead of the rim or whatever that was with the vision there. Is there anything else that Mo has added to his game, or is it just kind of that, you know, that off season with the team and the experience starting last year?
I really just think he's sort of ahead of where he was last year in terms of understanding how he fits. His role is more like clearly defined than the other wings. You know, Allen's role hasn't changed so much because Allen's game is sort of specific. He shoots and he doesn't get rebounds. And but Mo, he cuts into space well. He works off the two guards. Like, he plays really well next to Dame and CJ because he cuts into space and isn't a good offensive rebounder. I don't know if he's added a bunch to his game other than just being a little more aggressive in terms of looking for, hey, I can get to the rim here and post a JJ Redick up, or I can seal off Mike Conley type of thing. But other than he just making threes, I don't think there's like been this big change in his game. He's the guy who understands where he fits and how he's going to get his more. And he's a better defender than the other two, so that helps him look better out there.
So you did bring up rebounding a couple of times there. And I just got to ask, dude, what's up with rebounding this year with the Blazers? What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, recently they lost Chief, and he's their best rebounder. Maybe not statistically, he's their best rebounder. Probably Ed Davis is their best, like, go get the ball rebounder. Who knows? They were a middle of the road defensive rebounding team last year. They weren't like particularly good at it, but they weren't bad at it. It wasn't a weakness necessarily. Now they're awful. And it's hard to say. I mean, maybe it's playing the smaller lineup. Maybe it's trying to get out on the break earlier. Who knows? But them being worse at defensive rebounding is probably the strangest and biggest issue for me for them. Listen, if you watched this team last year, you didn't think they were going to take this huge jump to become an elite defensive unit. Nobody who watched them play 80 games last year said, you know, this team has what it takes to become a top five defense. Maybe you thought they'd be pretty good. You thought they'd be pretty good on offense. You didn't think that they would be the worst rebounding team in the league. So that's one of those that they don't have a good answer for. I've asked a bunch, both sort of in formal settings and non-formal settings. Some of it, they say it's effort. I don't know if I believe that. I think some of it is effort, but some of it is just, it's just bizarre. And without Chief, they're in trouble because what, you know, who do you put in there that's a good rebounder and also can play? I guess Noah, but like how much do you really want to play Noah?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the narrative of this Blazers team, the way they're constructed, I mean, you said it before that Alfred Gamino being your best rebounder, I think that says something about your team just in and of itself. And the narrative about this team has been in order for them to maximize their potential, they have to be a stellar offensive team and a reasonably okay, maybe slightly better than average.
Yeah, 13. I'd say 13 is their lucky number for defense. They'd be pretty damn good if they were the 13th best defense in the NBA.
Right. And so, I mean, we've had, you know, a season plus with roughly the same cast of players at this point. I mean, barring one of these players who has not yet taken a leap, taking some unexpected leap, maybe Allen Crabbe, everything clicks, maybe Myers Leonard, everything clicks. And it, some of those things, I think, I mean, me as a fan, we're hoping, I was hoping to maybe see a little bit of that even early in the season. But barring any of that, do you think this Blazers team, do you think that they have the potential to actually become that team that's stellar offense, slightly above defense? Or what we seeing early on this season, is it showing that maybe kind of the maximum potential of this team isn't quite as high as we thought it might be at the end of last season?
Well, I don't know what you thought it was going to be. I still think that with Al-Farouq Aminu, this team could be a pretty good defensive group. Not like actually good. I'm not talking like the Spurs and what we've seen from the Clippers for the last year and a half. But they were at the end of last year when they got Mo into the lineup and even before that, but from the sort of January run on, they locked up bad teams. Bad teams couldn't score against the Blazers. Good teams, they did whatever they wanted. That's a whole nother problem. But bad, they locked up bad teams. They dominated some bad teams. You know, they rolled through that one stretch. They were 18-4 over 22 games, I think. And they did that because if you didn't have a top flight superstar to create mismatches, the Blazers made it tough to score. I still think somewhere that team exists, but I don't think it exists without Chief. And I really, really, really believe that Aminu is more important than fans realize to this team because they see him launch those catapult jumpers and he misses them bad when he misses them. He hits them off the side of the backboard. He airballs straight away wide open threes. But he's, you know, if he gets up around 33, 34% from three and he shoots a high volume, that's fine. And his ability to switch with Mo Harkless and guard fours and do all the things that sort of let them do what they did into the playoffs, that makes them pretty good. I still think they could be pretty good. It's just how if Aminu is out for a month, how low is their floor? And I feel like that's what we've seen in the last week is that they can occasionally be really, really bad. And I think that's what fans are most scared of is that what if they're really, really bad for 3.5 weeks before Aminu gets back?
Yeah, so one of these guys who would be ostensibly getting more playing time with Al-Farouq Aminu out would be Ed Davis. And the last couple of games, he's picked it up a little bit, I guess, in Aminu's absence. But, you know, up to this point, I feel like, you know, Ed Davis, he wasn't playing as much. And when he was playing, he didn't seem to be as effective as he was last season. And I'm curious there, is there some kind of an unreported injury that we don't know about or you know, what was going on early on this season, you know, with Ed Davis?
I think some of it was he just kept committing immediately two stupid fouls the moment he checked into the game. He would step on the court and immediately commit a stupid foul and then go down to the other end and commit a stupid foul. And then he wouldn't play. And Terry would go somewhere else because he said, oh, my God, Ed, I cannot play you if you do this every time down the court. Some of it was just Ed is so specific in what he does. You know, he shoots inside of 4 feet. He rolls to the rim and he sort of makes that one dribble pass. He doesn't do anything beyond that. He's not going to sort of do the weird Mason Plumlee 18 footer for no reason thing. He's not a ball handler. He's an okay passer. He's a better passer than you'd think for someone like him. But I just think that he had trouble finding his rhythm early in the year, and that he's not the kind of guy who can do other things if his immediate sort of rhythm defense is poor. You know, like you said, he played well the last two games. Look at his numbers. It's not like he's like 6-7, 9-7. You know, like it's like, oh, Ed Davis played really, really well. He had 9-7. It's like, Ed Davis played really bad. He had 4-2. So, you know, he was unplayable, honestly, for about five games in the middle of it, right at the start of the season. They're going to play him against centers, and against certain centers, they want to play Myers. So it's just, Ed played the best basketball of his life last year, so maybe he played over his head for that part of the season, and he's sort of regressing in a natural, believable way. But part of me feels like he will be fine. But part of me feels like he's the guy you got to worry about the least on the team.
So last year we saw, you know, Noah Vonleh start for what, 56 games or so, 60 games, somewhere along those lines. This year, when Aminu got hurt, Noah Vonleh started one game, and it seems like that experiment was shelved after one game. Is he out of the rotation pretty much entirely right now? Like, what's up with Noah Vonleh?
I think Terry is really specific in how he wants to approach certain matchups. This is kind of a bad example, but like a Blake Griffin is a Noah Vonleh matchup. Like an athletic, put the ball on the four power forward is a Noah Vonleh matchup. Like Salah Mejri is a Myers Leonard matchup. So if teams go with like a true center and a sort of Taj Gibson-y or Kenneth Free power forward, they'll put in Myers for now because they think Myers' spacing and his size can help them more. But if it's a more athletic, chase him around type power forward, they want that to be Noah. I just don't think Terry's totally comfortable with 35 Noah Vonleh minutes. I mean, it wasn't like Terry played Noah a lot last year as is. He said, you're going to play 7 minutes to start both halves and then you will chill on the bench. He sort of carved out a role, even though he happened to start. So I don't think he's out of the lineup. I just think that Stotts is like really specific in how he approaches the big man rotation. Because there's been nights when Ed hasn't played and you'd think like Ed could kind of help.
Yeah.
But he trusts Mason. He at least to some extent, he's letting Myers work through a really tough, tough, tough start to the season. And Noah is, he doesn't see him as a five, and he'd rather go truly small with Mo at the four against other power forwards.
So it seems like Mason Plumlee is taking up the majority of the minutes they're available at the center position. And it seems to be like he is probably the most consistent big in the rotation right now. If you're taking in both ends of the court into account, I mean, he's no hero on the defensive end. But in terms of maybe, you know, playing within the framework of the defense, it seems like he's probably more, you know what you're going to get more with Plumlee than some of the younger guys and, you know, whatever was going on with Ed Davis. Does that seem fair to say? I guess what I'm trying to get at here is how is this big man rotation going to be working out, you know, for the next several weeks, depending on how Aminu's, you know, health goes?
Well, you're just highlighting how important Al-Farouq Aminu is. Like, what the hell do they do at power forward? That's basically their question every single night. How the hell do we guard fours? Who's going to guard him? Oh, like Mason Plumlee had to guard Danilo Gallinari last week. You know, this is their huge question. It's not going to be 35 minutes of Noah Vonleh ever. If Myers Leonard can't make shots, it's not going to be 30 minutes of him. So it's going to be 14 minutes of those three guys and some of Mo Harkless at the four and a ton of Mason Plumlee, just a boatload of Mason Plumlee, because Stotts trusts him and he's a little more skilled on offense. I think his lack of shooting has really hurt the Blazers in the last few games. I think teams are keying in on his unwillingness or slow decision making to shoot the ball. So that's definitely an issue, but he's their best bet for better or for worse. And you know, everything keeps going back to Chief. He's somehow the Blazers' third best player.
You know, I just want to kind of, let me bring in just the random eyeball test here. I have nothing to substantiate this claim at all, but just kind of watching the games here and watching Myers Leonard, and Dame or CJ or whomever the ball handler is and the pick and pop. You know, I feel like I'm just waiting for Myers-Leonard to get the ball kicked out to him. It seems like he's wide open quite a bit, and he could be used a little more often, you know, to be keeping the defense honest. And it seems like out of the pick and pop, he's not quite getting the amount of action that maybe we would have expected him to get, you know, based on the projections from the end of last season and this summer. So is there anything going on? You know, I guess, you know, are we just going to go down the list here and say what's going on with this player? I mean,
isn't that like that's how the Blazers, if they hadn't lost by what, like 600 to the Bulls last night, it would have felt like, you know what? Because they're still on pace to win 48 games, just for the people who are scared out there, for the sky is falling folks. You know, maybe their point differential suggests they're more like a 42-win team right now, maybe worse. But I kind of throw out these November blowouts by the time you get to January. I think point differential matters when you have a much bigger sample size. So we'll see. They haven't blown anyone out themselves, so that's probably troubling. You know, Myers is shooting 22% from three. Like, would you pass him the ball?
I mean, it depends on my other options.
So, you know, like, some of it just like his lack of confidence in his teammates, lack of confidence, and he just needs to see the ball go in a few times. You know, I think a lot of his problems last year before he got hurt were just confidence stuff, and I think that there is some real concern that that could be a thing that pops up again for him. Because, I mean, after the game last night, he was 0 for 6, played 15 minutes, and he stayed for an hour and got jumpers up. He knows he isn't making shots. It's not a secret. He's not good. He's not good enough to be in the league if he's a 25% three-point shooter. Straight up. He's just a tall person. He's like a very fit tall person. He was a 40% three-point shooter at one point. This is what he does. He's supposed to be an elite three-point shooter. If he gets back to that level, he's a heck of an asset. If he doesn't, he's a huge problem for the Blazers. And then you don't have all these options. You don't have the depth if one of these players that you think is part of the future core is awful.
Are you one of the observers of the Blazers who, you know, I feel like you kind of fall somewhere. Most people fall somewhere in, you know, he'll turn the corner eventually, and other people are like, just give up on the guy. You know what I'm saying? So where do you fall on that spectrum there?
The quick versus James debate, the much appreciated quick versus James debate. I probably tend towards the quick side of that. I'm not so sold on this guy's a special talent. Just wait. My thing is, like, at his best, he's really useful. When are we going to see his best? I think the clock's ticking. He's now officially on the clock for it's time to do the thing you do. Because otherwise, they have big decisions to make. You know, the Plumlee is a big decision. What to do with Ed Davis is a big decision. You know, some of it they've already decided with paying the wings, but the big man rotation's totally into the future is not necessarily set. And if Myers is not part of it, they've already paid him, and it becomes really, really messy.
So part of what folks, and some of those folks being myself included, have looked at this Blazers team and maybe said, okay, the way it's constructed right now, this isn't going to be the team that carries them forward, right? There's got to be some type of consolation trade happening at some point in the future. But then you look at the start of the season and a lot of these players who you thought may be building trade value are not doing so well. How much does that concern you if you're one of those people that's looking for a trade at some point down the line? Is this start worrisome, or is this more of just that GMs around the league are going to know either what these players' potentials are or how they're going to regress back to their averages? Basically, is this poor start tanking anyone's trade value at this point, or is that not really something that's a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think it's too early. A lot of times trades in the league, particularly with the good teams and sort of guys on like these long-term contracts are more likely to, you know, people don't trade for expiring contracts the way they used to. People don't want rentals. They're not going to give up assets to rentals. So long-term contracts are probably actually more valuable to trade in this climate to some extent. Maybe not $18 million for Allen Crabbe, but the general idea that having some security on the other end would make these guys tradable, I think that is acceptable it keeps everyone pretty much relevant. But these trades are going to happen because people get hurt. You know, health is going to dictate who's desirable. And also, there's a million centers out there, so it's always going to be wings. It's always going to be wings. So it's always Mo, it's always Crabbe, and it's always Turner. If there's ever going to be a team that says, hey, we need a not very good defensive center who can really shoot it. You know, Maurice Spates is not the guy who gets traded all the time.
So that's what I was going to ask, actually. If you're an opposing GM and you're looking at this Blazers team, what are the three or four tastiest contracts that you're looking at? What do you think of the three or four most tradable most tradable assets that the Blazers have in their arsenal right now?
Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu, probably even maybe above him, but Mo way the hell up there, especially if he keeps shooting like this. I mean, he's not paid $10 million, unfortunately, for the working class people is not starter money. That's just rotation. That's just like dude who plays type of money, which is a great job. Wish you could get it. Should have been taller and really good at something.
Damn it.
But so probably Mo, Chief, Ed, Myers because it's $10 million, Alan Crabbe because he's younger, and then Evan Turner. And like, I just don't see Mason Plumlee getting traded. Who's going to trade for a rental on Mason Plumlee? Just pay him in the summer. Like, you can just
exactly.
You could just pay him in the summer. The Blazers have a lot of weird players in the end of the bench that aren't getting traded. Jake Layman ain't going anywhere. Pat Connaughton ain't going anywhere. What's Tim Quarterman? He's around. Y'all want to hang out, Tim? He's probably. I know where he lives. If you guys want to hit him up.
So we've talked quite a bit here, you know, about Aminu's injury, and you know, Myers Leonard had that shoulder, surgery in the off season. There's a number of guys. Dame was dinged up ending last season. So I want to ask you, Mike, as a guy who, you know, watches the team on a regular basis in person, who's going to practice, is in the locker room. You know, we know that Aminu's hurt. We know that Festus is having a few setbacks with his recovery and whatever's happening there. You know, we know Aminu is going to be gone for the next, he'll be reevaluated in a couple weeks or so. Are there any other, you know, nagging injuries that guys have that are underreported that we're not hearing about in the injury report?
I don't think there's anything underreported injury wise. I think it's a little, I mean, everyone gets hurt. That's you play this many games. Everyone gets dinged up a little bit. You know, Dame had a little twist of his ankle. He had a little index finger injury. I think those are fine. You don't see him doing anything special necessarily with that. In the locker room last year, you would always see a guy like Gerald Henderson. He would always, always, always have ice on his knee. Ice on his hip after the game. There's not like a guy who you can always walk into the locker room and see icing himself down. Myers isn't doing anything special with that shoulder. He's fine. He's 100% fine. His problems are not physical, as far as I can tell. He's said over and over again that he's 100% healthy and strong enough and blah, 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 blah. So I think there's got to be another explanation there. But no, I don't think that there's this. I don't think that there's this secret injury thing. I don't think that there's some sort of lingering thing that's keeping these guys down. I think they're just playing badly. And I think it's that part is kind of a mystery. Why are they playing so poorly on some nights? Why haven't they just beat the brakes off some team yet? But no, I don't think that there's like, I don't think there's this secret. I don't think we're going to find out that, someone has had this dislocated finger for months and months and months.
Okay, so I know I said I was going to wrap it there, but I have one more quick question to clear up, and you may be able to help us here. Yeah, I think a lot of Blazers Edge fans, or at least a handful in the comments, have wondered this. A handful of us on the staff have wondered too. Do you have any word from Chris Kamen? What's going on with him this year?
I haven't heard since early in the season. I mean, there's a lot of bad tall people who play in the NBA. If you're going to sign one of them, I bet he's not going to be a 35-year-old who might have an attitude problem. I love Chris Kamen, but like, he didn't get along with anyone until he got to the Blazers. Like, it was unique that he was friendly here. He said Terry Stotts was the first coach that he didn't want to kill. You know, like, this is like, he's not a dude. I don't know if kill is the right word, but like, hey.
I think you can probably take him seriously on that, given everything.
Yeah, like,
his reality TV show, like, he's eating eyeballs. Like, what the
Yeah, he's like, he has been, for lack of a better term, like, he's been a problem a lot of places. So he's not the kind of like easy sort of slide him in chemistry guy that he was in Portland. He's not there everywhere. It did work here because he respects Damian Lillard and respects Terry Stotts. It might not be everywhere. Last I heard, his father had passed away early in the offseason, and so he was dealing with that. So there was some personal stuff that kind of maybe kept him out from really, really chasing the dream right away. I know that he, you know, he has a young child. He owns a ton of property in Michigan and actually in Eastern Oregon as well. So maybe he's sort of consolidating some assets and figuring out what he wants to do with his life. But I don't know. Chris Kaman is a cool guy. I don't know if Chris Kaman is necessarily a sought after NBA player.
Word. He's, yeah.
Like, I would like to hang out with Chris Kaman more than I would like to have him play for a basketball team I care about.
Well, he racked in that massive 5 or 6 year deal right there in the meat of his career that gave him 60, 70 million or whatever. So there's no doubt that Chris Kaman is doing just fine hunting and doing his outdoor thing, you know, whatever it may be. So we appreciate the update on the caveman, Mike. I want to give you the opportunity as we head out here to let Blazers Edge listeners know where they can find your work online.
Well, you can find me at OregonLive.com/Blazers. That's where all my stuff, my colleague's stuff will be. If you still subscribe to a print newspaper, it's in the Oregonian almost every day. Almost every day. Mike Richmond gets a byline. Damn near. I also have a podcast. My Friend Chuck podcast is on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, pretty much anywhere you get it. You get your podcast, I will be there. My Friend Chuck, look us up. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike G Rich. I'm also on other social medias, but I don't want you following me there, so don't.
All right, thanks for coming on, Mike. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, Chris. Thanks a lot, man. Peace out, Brandon.
All right, we're all done with episode 187 of the Blazers Edge podcast. We'd like to thank you very much for joining us this week. We'd also like to thank Trailblazers beat reporter for Oregon Live, Mike Richmond, for coming on the show. Also, just a quick note, we are aware that there were some audio glitches and quality issues for this episode. We'd like to apologize for those. And we'd also like to say thank you for sticking with us through those issues on this episode.
Honestly, Chris, I think that people may have appreciated even more audio glitches just so they don't have to listen to my voice. Our, as usual, our intro and outro beats are brought to you by Odar. You can check out his work at soundcloud.com/Odar Beats. Be sure to tune in to the Blazers Edge Midweek Podcast with managing editor Dave Deckard and contributor Dan Marang. And also check out Tara and Joe on The Fanalysts. They're on every other week. And for Chris Lucia, I am Brandon Goldner. And remember, if it is snowing on Mount Hood, the snowboarding's probably pretty good. Good.